Item B today is small-scale suction dredging rules, and this is a briefing. Staff?
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Jeff Davis, Assistant Director responsible for Habitat Program. I'll maybe set a little bit of context here, and then we'll get to business. As you all know, this has historically been a very polarizing issue for us, and that, you know, that invites a lot of perspectives. And we want to make sure that we're giving you all the public feedback and all the information that you need in order to make your decision down the road about these rules. So we'll go through kind of what we've heard to date prior to the actual formal public process, which is when we filed the CR 102. So we got a ways to go yet. And at the end of the day, as you know, this authority requires that we protect fish life. And so we want to make sure that we're able to do that and we're able to demonstrate that we're doing that when we go to implement whatever rules you adopt down the road here. So maybe with that, Randy, do you want to hop into the program?
Sure. So good morning. This morning, we'd like to brief you on what the rulemaking objectives were and some of the criteria we used for evaluating the recommended changes, also our outreach efforts to date, and our staff proposal for the rulemaking objectives and our rulemaking timeline. And we're going to keep this at a high level. So we provide a lot more detail in the briefing materials than we're going to go through this morning with you. Encourage you to ask questions if you want to get more details from us. The rulemaking objectives are on your in your summary sheet. On your, there's an attached CR 101 that has the rulemaking objectives.
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
I'll try to. Yes, I apologize.
You did it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The first and main objective was to remove suction dredging as an authorized activity in the Golden Fish pamphlet and require written HPAs for suction dredging. And then we wanted to develop, looking at developing an application method for suction dredging that is streamlined. And by streamlined, we don't mean less protective of fish life. We mean really targeting the application process to get the information from the prospectors that we need to make decisions on how to provision the permit, but not ask, extraneous information that's not necessary to make that determination. The next was to develop application reporting methods that enable us to gather information about how many prospectors are engaged in suction dredging and where they're working and how much they're doing. And then last, to identify methods to prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species through the movement of suction dredging equipment in and around the state. So this summer, we had outreach. We did four public listening sessions around the state. We had three meetings with tribal staff. We had two stakeholder work group meetings. And we had an agency meeting where we met with the services, ecology, Forest Service,
Corps,
DNR. And then we also got about 112 emails into our HPA rules mailbox with comments. So when we looked at evaluating the recommendations that came to us, the first thing that we look at is, does the recommendation, do we have the authority under our statute to implement the recommendation? So that's kind of the first filter. And then does the recommendation or the change that's requested meet the objectives of the rulemaking? And then does that change, reasonably relate to the protection of fish life. And we had actually 7 criteria. I'm not going to read them all, but most of them reflect what's required in the Administrative Procedures Act for us to consider in rulemaking. So that's kind of the filter that we use. So in general, the comments that we heard, most prospectors, you know, think either the current rules are too onerous already or they're fine as is. They don't think there's a valid reason to require standard HPAs for section dredging. And with the recent Cascadia ruling, they've kind of reiterated this to me in recent emails. They haven't gone in the email box, but... in general, tribes in the environmental community don't think the scope of the current rulemaking goes far enough to protect fish, especially those species that are listed as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act. So you'll see there's a document that was also provided with comments, and you'll see a lot of the comments actually... really reflect both of these viewpoints, and we weren't able to make much progress either in the work groups or the listening sessions and bringing folks together. One thing that everybody did seem to voice or support was for more enforcement, maybe for different reasons. But that was something that we did hear that they could agree on. That was about as much as we heard there was agreement on. There's pretty diametrically opposed viewpoints on this issue, so very passionate on both sides. You know, I think really the environmental community and the tribes, you know, what they really want is more oversight of this activity. And, you know, they have a lot of suggestions in the rule, in their comments to bring, you know, to use our authority to try to bring other agency authorities into this, to regulate this activity. So we've heard that, and I know we're committed to... We're committed to improving our compliance or monitoring of this activity, and then also doing implementation and effectiveness monitoring going forward. So with that, is there any questions before I pass it over to Teresa to talk about aquatic invasive species?
This is Commissioner Graybill.
Commissioner Graybill.
Just a quick question. I noticed that one of the items was to determine where and how much suction dredging occurs.
Mm-hmm.
My question is in regard to how much on these new HPA applications. Does that mean what portion of a stream they're going to be active in? How much material they intend to move? I'm not sure what that means.
I think Pat's going to cover that when we get to the actual rule changes in the monitoring, but it is getting an estimate of the area affected by the suction dredging.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if there's no other questions on that, this is Teresa starting to talk about the actual rule proposals. One of the objectives was to look at identifying methods to prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species using this equipment both into and within Washington. The existing Aquatic Invasive Species Statute provides the basis for requiring what they call level one decontamination, which is the clean, drain, and dry method between work sites. And we've included that as a provision in the draft rules, so that Pat will be going through in a minute. We recognize the importance of your request regarding aquatic invasive inspections, And we're working with Rules Coordinator Scott Bird, the Fish Program Enforcement, and our Assistant Attorneys General to find a way to incorporate inspection requirements for suction dredges coming into Washington from out of state. So we're, in fact, I will be meeting with Scott Bird in a couple minutes on this issue, what we can actually accomplish in these rules.
Oh, I was going to say, just to clarify, one of the things we're looking at is should that rule language changes go into our rules or go into the aquatic invasive species rules that we have.
All right, this is Pat Chapman. Let me just briefly go through kind of an overview of what we've put into draft rules that you'll see when we do the 102. There's three sections that we've dealt with. The first is the definition section. And because the existing definition for suction dredges was limited to kind of uses that were used a decade or more ago, we felt like we had to adjust that definition, so we changed that to encompass some of the newer equipment like dry land dredges, gravity dredges, and hand-operated dredges that we'll deal with in the rules on mineral prospecting. And then we added a separate definition for dry land dredges because those are operated in a different method than the standard dredges. Then if we go into the mineral prospecting rules, which is 226-6300, which is the large section of rules that we have right now that encompass the golden fish pamphlet and the other, all the methods that we have, we eliminated the wording that pertains to suction dredging. So we eliminated all that wording so that it takes the suction dredging out of authority under the golden fish pamphlet, and then created a new section, 305, that deals with all the new suction dredging activities. So another aspect of 300 is that because we removed some language, there's some things we had to clarify of remaining wording to make sure that people understand what was pertaining to the remaining equipment. For example, there are combination high bankers and dredges that we felt could be used as a high banker under the golden fish pamphlet because they wouldn't be operated as a suction dredge. But if they're operated as a suction dredge, we'd put them under 305. So then in 305, the new section for suction dredging, first thing is we require a written application to us, so we would collect information on the applicant, who they are, contact information, what it is they're asking to do, what type of suction dredging, that sort of thing. And in addition to that, we then would require a written HPA rather than the golden fish pamphlet for those activities. And there's a number of different ways we can issue HPAs. We can issue individual site-specific HPAs, or for a broad base of stream, or then what we call a model HPA, which we're anticipating could be looking at the existing work windows and issue those in a streamlined method. In addition to carrying over the existing language from 300 into 305, we didn't really change any technical provisions about suction dredging. We felt those are pretty protective. So we're just carrying that language over. We added some additional language for dry land dredges because those are operated, just like the word says, they're operated outside of the wetted perimeter, like a high banker. So we created language kind of replicating what the requirements are for high bankers for dry land dredges. So we're not really creating anything new. Then in addition, we required annual reporting. So regardless of what type of dredging, what type of HPA they get for dredging, that they must report to us on at least an annual basis of where they worked and how much material they moved. And we collect that data, we get a sense of, despite where they said they wanted to go in their application, we get a sense of where they actually went and how much effort there was stable. And then finally, as Teresa said, we added a requirement about cleaning equipment for prevention of aquatic invasives. So that's an overview of what we have. We have any questions on those?
Nick.
Commissioner Carpenter, this is Commissioner Thorburn.
Commissioner Thorburn.
I have a couple of questions, Pat. Thank you for the overview. So the dry land dredging, I wasn't clear. Would that require an HPA?
Yes.
Okay. Dry land implies that it's dry land to me. Could you explain how a hydraulic project applies?
Dry land dredge is really the only difference between that and a regular dredge is the nozzle has been adapted to allow introduction of water at the nozzle. A typical suction dredge has to be submerged underwater to be able to suck material off the bottom.
Okay.
And a dry land dredge supplies water to the nozzle itself that allows it to suck that material up even if you're outside of a stream.
So
there's potential depending on where they work and where the water is discharged that they're using to cause sedimentation to the stream or undercutting banks, that sort of thing. That's why we want to have specific for that activity.
Great, thank you. My second question relates to the information that will be collected. I heard in terms of the monitoring and annual reporting that the place of activity would be required, but it sounded to me like the permit was not to be issued for a specific place in what you're proposing, that kind of information wasn't going to be collected and. Is that correct?
No. We anticipate there will be a variety of different applications that prospectors would submit. If they know exactly where they want to work, say on their federal mining claim, we would want them to be there specifically where that is. And then when they do their annual report, we'll know that that's where they are working. However, there may be cases where they want to work in a whole stream. And in that case, they could apply for that. We might have the biologist would be required to do a site visit to determine where in that stream they could work, and the permit would be issued accordingly with those locations identified. And then again, when they report, they'd have to tell us exactly where they went. Right now, we don't have specifics in the draft rule, to say exactly what reporting requirements are because we anticipate over time we may want to change what we're asking for. And if we're trapped in rule with specifics about what we're asking, then we couldn't adapt very easily. So we can do that by requiring reporting, then we can ask for various things in the report.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there any other discussion on the small-scale suction dredging rules today?
This is Commissioner Baker.
Commissioner Baker.
Comment on the proposed rule change?
Please.
I'd like to note that I'm also going to, I will be a yes on this motion, but it's a qualified yes. I see this as a step along the way. Reading the materials that were presented to us, it appears that there are still very strong feelings on both sides of this issue, and even the Citizens Advisory Board, the tribes, and the environmentalists still don't think that we're doing enough. That, to me, is a urges caution and also urges us to keep taking steps to do what we can to achieve our mission, just protecting fish. Also, I wanted to note that I did attend the first day of the Centennial Accord last week and saw many of you there. The tribes, this is what they decided to focus on that day. It wasn't salmon, it wasn't the Columbia River. I mean, we were focusing on all that, but this was very important to them. So I see this as a big step in the right direction. I also see it as a way, in talking to Jeff Davis and others up at the agency, of getting the information that we need to make informed decisions. But I sure don't want to think that this is the end of the process. The two things that I would like to see explored as we go through this rulemaking is the same things that we've asked for a while now. I don't understand why Washington is such an outlier with the Western states, in that our agency and the Department of Ecology aren't working closer together to ensure that those water quality permits are, or at least that the water quality coming out of these processes stays good. I would like very much for us to work closer with DOE, and I would like to at least understand the way that process goes ahead. The other thing is the enforcement's interesting, because if we're issuing what we're calling model permits for a stream, I don't know how we can ask our enforcement officers to go check out, if we feel like we need to, what's going on. So I'd like to ask our staff to, I understand why the Lenox want to keep their precise location confidential, and they don't want to give us GPS coordinates or the other things that TU and others would like to see us require. I kind of get that. But I think that our agency, if we were given that, I think there's a reason for us to know that. And I think that we can explore whether we can keep confidential precise locations, but at least get them. So those are the two things that I'd like to ask for. And I'd like to make it clear that this is just a step. Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker. Any other comments from the commission? Well, hearing none, this is a briefing today. We will not vote on this today, as I understand it. So if there are no other comments, I'll move forward. Ask one more time, are there any additional comments on this item?
Commissioner Carpenter, this is Jeff.
Jeff Davis, please.
I do want to say, you know, we forwarded you the citizen and the HPA citizen. We're essentially saying we recommend that whatever rules you adopt in the end are compliant with clean, you know, water quality as well as ESA. You also had a memo from a part of the stakeholder work group that gave some recommendations for your consideration. We're going through those right now to see what can we do right now. Some of those that I've looked at might require statutory change, so obviously we wouldn't be able to accomplish some of that in a rulemaking. And the other important thing you bring up, the tribes, the cultural resource component. So when we met with several tribes over at Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, the Snoqualmie tribe in particular brought up the cultural resource issue, and that's a pretty valid concern from my perspective. So we've committed to talk with the AG's office, and also committed with natural resources. They've been going through a cultural resource process for forest practice applications, and so we're still going to pursue those and working with the tribes and others, so we're not recreating a wheel, but that trying to take care of that valid concern from my perspective.
Very good. Thank you, Jeff, for that. Okay, that will conclude item B.